Mormons can wait to see which one will they choose. This week in Mormons, you get a Joseph Smith style. With more and E upon the host, G up in Al. Al's the big bearded guy from Missouri. D.O.F. is the bearded nationalist from D.C. This week, you get the funny stuff, the fun things. Like what casserole will be made for General Comfrey. Or what weird rum happened in Raw, Idaho. From Glenn Beck to Mitt Romney, things like that, you know. You get the pro Mormon dudes bringing more Mormon news. Pleasing the eyes of God and Latter-day Saints too. Go get the info you need, I'm sure you really would like. So catch them on air whenever they're not on the bike. This Mormon week in Mormon,
everything's about Mormon.
This week in Mormon,
everything's about Mormon.
Be up and out in the morning.
Hello, everyone. Hi, it's time for This Week in Mormons. Party time! Party time for the week! Crazy party times! Everyone, get excited! Al is here! My co-host, Alan Doan Esquire.
I'm over it. I'm not even excited anymore.
You should be so excited, my good man, because we are about to have a discussion about so many righteous things. About church things.
These things are righteous!
Gnarly righteous
that
things.
That Ferris Bueller is a real righteous dude.
He is a righteous dude. And we are more righteous than he. Yes, I'm making a judgment call.
Aren't we?
Yeah. On one's righteousness. If you're tuning in for the first time, this is a show where we talk about Mormon
If you're tuning news. In for the first time, shame on you. Where have you been? I'm in a huge room, so it's going to sound echoey. So when I say shame on you,
like this.
It should sound like the voice of God. That's kind of what I was going for.
If you want, I can mess with that.
Do you imagine if God said shame on you? I feel like that would be the worst.
I can mess
You're
with
like,
it.
Like, hey, God, really sorry about that thing, and I had that terrible thought, and he was just like, Brother Openshaw, shame on you. Shame on you.
Isn't that kind of the beauty, actually, of an understanding of Heavenly Father? Because it's really Heavenly Father, I believe, just always just says, I love you. Just get your, you know, pick yourself up. Let's just keep going here.
I love you. I love you. I love you.
I don't think he ever looks at me and says, shame on you. Nor would I look at a bishop or anybody and they're like, shame on you.
Yeah. Yeah. I just feel like that's such an aggressive way to discipline someone. Shame for shame.
Yeah.
For shame's
sake.
Oh,
but we will have much talk about disciplining, I believe, today.
This has been a big week, Mormon-wise, man.
We'll get to that.
We had requests for an emergency podcast. Who is that, the LDS Mormon guy?
I know, many people. That was absolutely impossible, though. You've been busy. I had in-laws in town and stuff, and so there was...
Absolutely. You went to Colonialsburg.
I did.
Williamsburg.
My wife's mom and our nephew came into town, and we...
That's a mother-in-law.
Yeah.
And a nephew of yours now.
Yes, a cousin-in-law. Nephew-in-law. That's the word I wanted. Either way, not my blood. That's what I'm saying.
But any way you slice it, I'm not responsible.
But we had fun. They saw things in D.C. We did stuff here. We went down to Colonial Williamsburg and did stuff there. And
well, that's good because you probably never had to do that before, so you finally got to see all that.
I went to Colonial Williamsburg a few years ago, actually, but it was fun to go back. I saw parts of it I had not seen before, so it was worthwhile, more fun to do with the wife.
Wait, what did you see?
It's Colonial Williamsburg. You go and visit the silversmith, or you say hi to the brickmakers. The brickmakers were delightful because they let us jump around in their clay pile, and that's not a euphemism.
And that doesn't mean anything. That's just
they make
literally.
The bricks out of clay. They got a bunch of clay and a big old trough, big old, like, you know, pen. And you can just take your shoes off and just stomp around in the clay and then go rinse off. On a 95-degree day, it was delightful to just stand there in the cold clay.
Cool clay.
Oh, and then rinse off.
Oh, man.
I enjoyed it. It was fun going
back. That sounds awesome.
It was tremendous. And we had a good time with them. I learned how to play rummy.
Did you rub clay all over your mother-in-law and make her look like a funny face?
No, she actually stood on the sidelines and refused to
typical
be part of the fun.
That Mathis clan. What a bunch of weenies.
So that was fun. I also, I guess we can go public with this now. Some, my church life is
Jeff's pregnant.
It's like the movie Junior. Have you seen it? It's a brilliant film.
We're having a baby.
But my church life has taken a busier turn, I believe, as it will. Al's known about this, but so I got put in as the Elders Quorum president. Proof that this is, God stretches us or
I feel like
humbles
this is
us.
Such a humble brag.
It's not a humble brag.
I just needed to mention this. Hey, everybody.
It's stuff you that, probably, oh, shush. It's stuff that went
you
down.
You probably didn't realize how spiritual I am.
No one realized how spiritual I am. No,
just do me a favor. Just tell your friends how Christ-like I am. That'd be real cool.
Yeah, everyone, if you don't know already, I have keys.
I'm a president of... literally, Jeff asked me if he should get EQP at JeffOpenshaw.com for his people.
Well, I own the domain, so why not make up a new...
Hey, guys, you can email me. I'm the EQP. At gmail.com.
I just want look to it as a great way to silo any and all of my email correspondence for the calling.
And everybody would be like, hey, Jeff. And you'd be like, that's president?
That's President Openshaw. Thank you. I will only be addressed as president from now on. Or sir, yes, sir.
I feel like I've been watching too much of the West Wing because that feels very natural.
Or to me. Oh, Captain, my Captain. Oh, I actually should go by Oh, Captain, my Captain. That would be good.
Oh, my gosh. Well, this week has been a big week for me. Actually, see, Jeff always tells me to do things and then I just say no out of spite.
Yeah, that's typically how
and
we
so
are.
And so I finally, I mean, as you know, the last 3 weeks, I'm enjoying me a little West Wing still. And I listened to the Clarity album from Jimmy Eat World, which Jeff is a huge fan of. Huge fan. And what else did I do that you wanted me to do forever? I listened to a whole Limbeck album. I mean, I feel like those three things.
Well, I don't believe, Al, you must listen to this Limbeck album has been
I finally come to the point where I'm like, look, all right, all these suggestions. It's just like a little Jeff in my life. And so when I need you, buddy, I know right where to go.
Oh, that's
And great. There you are. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember.
Did you get to the end of season 2 yet on the West Wing?
No, that's tonight.
Oh my goodness! You know how it's building up with the scandal of the.
Don't say anything.
Oh, we can spoil it. It's 10 years old. The MS scandal, but the way it. Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness!
I'm excited. Oh, it's pins and needles. Jeff.
I watched it with our mutual friend Joe one time, and we loved it so much we rewinded to watch the final 5 minutes again, and we just sat there. Jaws on the floor, amazed. I'm overhyping it, but that's okay. I don't care.
You probably don't notice this, but I am overhyping.
Unlike the company Tesla, which does a great job underhyping and then over-delivering, I overhype, under-deliver.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
Well, I'm glad that you're having a good time watching television and listening to the best album of 1999. Definitely.
Agreed. Me too. Thanks, Jeff. You're the best.
Anytime, buddy. Anytime at all. That Table for Glasses, what a song.
What a song.
Lead my skeptic sight, my friend.
So, so that, let's see. No, then this next weekend I fly back to Salt Lake. So we got a busy, we got a lot of stuff ahead of us. So yeah, we couldn't do the special show.
Too busy.
For all of these.
And I was at a conference last week. There was just no, too many things going on. Can I actually tell you a story though? At least of my experience with something?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, and this isn't like, Elders Quorum stuff, but this has been an interesting experience for me actually learning things, okay? Because I've never been in a position before where I've needed to, you know, really call counselors and things along those lines. And really, you know, I was even texting you about it and asking you for advice on things. And it was a whole new area for me. So there was a lot to learn in actually trying to discern revelation, trust in the Lord and the choices you're making, and make sure it gets confirmed. And I was stressed out about it all week because I had a conference. I had the in-laws in town. I felt like I did not have a lot of time. And my stake president wanted names by like Thursday morning. And he only gave me the calling the Sunday before. And so I had a lot on my mind. And it was just kind of funny that kudos to my wife, actually, Danielle, shout out to you, that she said, you know what you should do? Find a quiet place in the convention center if you can. Read some scriptures. I know you can't flip through them, but just get on your phone and see what sticks. Read something. Feel the spirit. Think about the names. And I tell you what, things like this actually work, ladies and gentlemen. Fascinating exercise for me. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to...
Revelation is real?
Revelation is real, but it was something I was really concerned about. And actually, I found kind of an isolated place where nothing was going on in the convention center. I opened my LDS, my gospel library, and flipping through, I just kind of like flicked my hand to just kind of scroll through on the Book of Mormon, which doesn't work very well because there's only like, 13 books total in the Book of Mormon, so... eventually, I just said, Second Nephi it is. And because there's like 34 chapters, I'll be in a good place. and I scrolled around, and I kind of guided myself to 2 Nephi chapter 9, because 10 got me on, like, I got some Isaiah chapters and stuff that wasn't speaking to me, but I read 9, and it was good, and I liked it. Point is, I struggled, but I feel like I learned something, and I grew, and so it was good. I hope everyone can do stuff like that in their own personal lives, whatever their calling may be.
Yeah, you know what's great about that, man, is I mean, we say it kind of in joking, but Revelation is real. And that's, I mean, it's one of those things that's easy to take for granted. And one of those, it's also one of those things, though, that I feel like a lot of people can sort of call into question and say, well, maybe I'm just telling myself, or maybe I'm convincing myself because I really want to hear and do this thing.
Or, so,
having genuine interactions with the Spirit on a regular occasion is the one thing that I mean, I feel like has been able to keep me with a testimony in the church. I mean, you take that out,
yeah,
and I mean, you come into so many crummy situations in life where doubts arise and all that stuff, and if you have nowhere to go in those circumstances, those moments, man, it's a hard life. It's a really hard life.
It is, and for me,
if you take God out of it, it's crummy.
It is, but and for me, it's been interesting because I've really, I guess, always had in some ways the luxury of revelation by sort of logic, revelation by axiom even, where I've really just been able to have pretty clear choices in front of me. And I say, this makes the most sense. I'm going to pray about it. I feel good about it. But I've been up in primary for a year and a half. And so this sort of, you know, two-edged sword where I felt like my first reaction was like, well, I'm going to Elders Quorum and I don't know anybody there. And I don't know anything that's going on there. So I don't have this to lean on. You know, I don't have obvious choices for things to do because I don't even know who's doing what and what's going to be good and stuff. But by the same token, when I thought about it more, I said, this is also a great opportunity because I don't know anything that's going on. I have no prejudices, no preconceived notions of anybody or the kind of work that's going on. And so I really had to just sort of try to set aside what I thought I knew and just go for it, which was new for me. It really, really was. I've always had the luxury of just kind of working through what I already kind of knew and situations I was familiar with and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So jumping all in without knowing anything, it's scary, but you just make of it what you can. And still, I'm scared out of my mind that I'll just like drive this whole
thing. I'm
gonna drive this whole thing into the ground, but I'm gonna do my best to keep it above water. We'll see how we do.
If it were, yeah, you ruin everything. The bishop's laying in the aftermath of his burning, smoldering church building 2 years from now, and he'd be like, "I should have never put that
never
open shot kid
that
in
guy.
Here."
The sad thing is I don't ever like to I like to do my best with any calling I'm given. And the only way to like not get callings where you're going to mess things up is to stink at doing your calling. So it's this, but I refuse to stink at something. Like I want to give it my best because I want to do my best job. And I don't, you know, what are you going to do? The only way to not get a calling is to suck at the callings you get. That's basically the lesson, people. But don't suck at the callings you get. Then the church doesn't grow. It's terrible.
All right. Well, let's have some.
Do you want
some chit chat?
Do you want to get to the serious stuff now, or or lamer stories to start? That way we can get them out of the way.
Let's jump right in.
Okay,
let's jump right in.
But then people might not stay.
If you don't care about this excommunication jibber jabber, skip 15 minutes ahead, and we'll meet you on the other side.
15 minutes is a conservative estimate, but
stay with us. No. I can get this out in 15 minutes. Ready, set, go. All right, Jeff, why don't you catch us up on what the situation
I get to.
Is.
Okay, so really very quickly after we had published last week's podcast, it came to
the timing was just uncanny.
I know, if we were recorded Wednesday
night.
They
waited for us to hit the press. They were controlling the news cycle.
They really knew that if we had the opportunity
to use a West Wing phrase.
They didn't want us to I like that control the news cycle is you think it's a West Wing phrase. It's just a general
Jeff
industry.
Was Toby and I'm clearly CJ.
No, I'm Sam Seaborn. Come on.
You're Josh, maybe.
Actually,
okay,
I kind
going.
Of am Josh. And Josh is my favorite character on the show, so it's perfect. Now I'm thinking of West Wing things. Okay, so you got Kate Kelly and you've got
right,
John.
Right after we went to press, this happened.
You've got Kate Kelly, you got John DeLynn. Kate Kelly, of course, the founder of the Ordained Women Movement. We've talked about it many times on the show. I feel like we've done so reasonably objectively. We've even talked about the benefits, the positive things that have come out of raising awareness of women's issues in the church. John DeLynn, the founder of the Mormon Stories blog and podcast community, and that's what he does. And he lives in Cache Valley. Kate Kelly's lived in D.C. Now I guess she's stopping in Utah for a bit before moving to Kenya, actually. Professionally, she's a human rights lawyer. So it came to light last week at the exact same time, interestingly enough, that both of them had received letters from their respective local leadership, basically summoning them to a church disciplinary court, which could include any number of resolutions, including and as much as excommunication, potentially. Of course, there are many stages here. Let's not forget, people, that one can be, I don't want to say simply disfellowshipped, but everyone in the story is running straight to excommunication, which isn't even necessarily the outcome, even if discipline does happen. So bear that in mind. So that's what's going on. Of course, Kate is being summoned because of her involvement and her continued involvement with the Ordained Women movement. I feel like John DeLynn's is a little bit murkier. I think it's just sort of a broader sum of everything he's been done for a long time at Mormon Stories. But I guess lately he's openly said he questions a lot of the actual core teachings of the church. Yeah. And when you're someone like John DeLynn, who has a following, and he in himself is amassed very much in the sense of a following, almost like a cult-like figure, you can understand why that might finally raise the flag at the church or his local leader and say, all right, we need to talk turkey. So that's sort of that's sort of where we're at. And there are a lot of details to consider here. A lot of things going on. It's been a very
So here we are, right, where all this stuff goes down, and there's been a ton of rhetoric going back and forth. A lot of you know, self-requested op-eds from people all over the place, sort of trying to digest, because the theme is that the church is trying to control these people, and they are forcing them out. So there's a lot of you know, President Nukdorf said that there's room for everyone. Now what are you doing? Why are you pushing me out of here? If there's room for everyone, there's room for me. Why is this happening? Russell right. Stevenson,
the Mormon history guy.
I like him. He has some fairly rational thoughts on this that he posted up on rationalface.com. So I mean, Jeff and I, we've been consuming this for a while. There's a couple of things that are you doing all right there, buddy? So there's a couple of things that we need to go over in order to have this conversation, though. First, we need to talk about excommunication in general, what it means, what it implies, all that kind of stuff. And second, let's split up John DeLynn and Kate Kelly and talk about them separately.
Okay. Take us there.
So excommunication in general, right? I feel like that's something that that a lot of people are misunderstanding and is being perpetuated in the media as something that's this sort of very, very harsh thing. Now, excommunication is a role in the repentance process,
can
right?
Be. Yeah.
A lot of people, I mean, it's the way that, like, once you've gone to a certain point, this is the way that they clear the slate, reset it, and say, hey, this is where we need to be. Let's come back in. It's not a, you didn't do everything you were supposed to do, so you don't qualify anymore for church membership. It's a, you know, the goal is to get you back to this point.
It's almost like spiritual.
And I think that's reflected
protection. In a way.
Yeah. I feel like that's probably a way to do it. And if you read the letters that were sent from the bishops and stake presidents to both Kate Kelly and John DeLynn, I think that's reflected in there, where it's a very, you know, they deal with it in a private matter. You'll notice it wasn't the church that went to the media to embarrass or hurt anybody. And they never would, right? It's a very private thing that they deal with in a private setting. And there's not a lot to these meetings. You get together and, have a discussion about what's going on. And so Kate Kelly's was a position against the church that was actively drawing people away, as John DeLynn was kind of similar. I mean, in the church, there's no other button really for like a hey, hold on, you're going too far in this. We need to reset and come back to it than like a disciplinary council.
Yeah, sure. That's the way to
right?
set it up.
And so, so with that understanding, I feel like we can have a conversation about what's going on here. It's interesting. A lot of people are pointing a finger at the church and sort of talking about how, you know, they're excommunicating them to protect themselves from Kate Kelly and John DeLynn. And I want you to just take a minute and think, in what way is the church saving face at all by taking these steps. In what way is the church better off for excommunicating them and unleashing this PR storm? They obviously had to have known that a woman with a megaphone the size of Kate Kelly and John DeLynn, who is has a competing podcast to ours, I mean, they've got audiences, right? As soon as they sent these letters, that it was going to be sort of a PR nightmare, which is come true for the church. So the church has no advantage in disciplining Kate Kelly or John DeLynn. It's not to the church's benefit to do this. So let's remove that argument right away, right? That's not something that I think anybody could successfully argue that they were somehow getting a benefit out of this.
I agree with you. Yeah.
And then, okay. And so then with that sort of foundation, let's jump into you want to do Kate Kelly first or John DeLynn? I think both of these are relevant for
discussion.
Let's
do John DeLynn first because I actually feel like there's less to say about John than there is about Kate. John DeLynn, I mean, what more do you want me to say about John DeLynn? John DeLynn, you know, he's run Mormon Stories for a while.
What is he being disciplined for?
He's being disciplined for apostasy. I'm trying to find the letter right. I'm actually trying to find the letter right here so we can read through it together. So here's the letter dated June 7th to John DeLynn. Brother DeLynn, as your stake president, the usual stuff. I hope you know I care deeply for you. I'm concerned about things you've said about the church and your place in it. That includes your recent public postings from earlier this month that you, quote, no longer believe many of the fundamental LDS church truth claims. And so he's greatly concerned about the claims that those and other statements could have upon members of the stake. Now he says, ordinarily I prefer to speak in person and in private about such matters and offer you the opportunity to do so. I'm aware of an email from your bishop when you requested that nobody contact you and stuff. But he says, I've chosen to write this letter to inquire whether you, by your earlier email to Bishop Hunt and your recent public statements, if you desire to have your name removed from the records of the church. As you know, if you make such a request, I am bound to honor it. But please be advised, if you do such things, you know, I would revoke temple, you know, your temple blessings are revoked, all that stuff like that. Please inform us, et cetera, et cetera. I have deep love for you. Let's figure it out. Now, the interesting thing is John DeLynn says he's never met this stake president, which is kind of funny to me in the time he's been there. And I believe he's had similar issues with his previous stake president, if his interviews that he's given since this time, since everything dropped, are accurate. So the John DeLynn one's funny. It's very hard for us to talk about this and not, I guess, sound like we're passing judgment. We're trying to be objective and view this through an outside lens and just analyze it for what it is without – we're trying not to pepper in too much of our personal insights. I mean, because personally, the John DeLynn one doesn't shock me. I feel like he's just kind of been slowly just traipsing off into his own little world for a long time. Plus, we have personal things with John DeLynn, but that's another story another time. But I don't wish the man loses his faith in his eternal blessings or anything like that.
So you get this letter, though, and I mean, most people's response would be like, oh, gosh, well, let me go talk to you. You know, if it's a misunderstanding, let's chat, and I can explain what's going on. I'm not disaffected. I have doubts. I'm struggling, but I still want to be in the church. I mean, that's all that needs to be said here, right? Like, it's not an ultimatum. There's nothing in this that says this is how things are going to proceed. John DeLynn's response, though, is to send this to the New York Times, basically. Right? So he sort of stirs up a media frenzy about it at a very opportune minute, as Kate Kelly was doing the same thing. So they both rode this wave together. And I mean, I think... like, I can't imagine a way that, or a scenario where dealing with a very private, very personal disciplinary counsel sort of experience like this in such a public way would show maturity in the gospel.
Yeah. Well, it is funny because John DeLynn was on Radio West the other day, a Utah publication, and he actually says the disciplinary courts are shameful and embarrassing. Now, shameful might be true. I think some people do view... because excommunication, like Al said, excommunication, no matter what, has a negative connotation. We can spin it all we want to say that it is a positive, necessary step sometimes, but just the sheer word excommunication conjures up negative imagery, much more so than, say, repentance, which I think we've done a better job of of trying to say it's a positive thing. Repentance doesn't mean you are bad, ergo you repent. It's something different. Excommunication does involve, you know, the revocation of all of your temple blessings, your membership in the church, many, many very serious things. I mean, you're not a member of the church anymore, obviously, with excommunication. And so, in some ways, it is difficult. And I think there are many who feel that that we perhaps we're past this moment as a church, that we're not in a place anymore where we're going to start going on witch hunts, per se, for those who have alternative points of view, who want to express those things or their doubts in whatever form that may be, because this is not the 90s when you would publish books. This is the day of the internet when everything is publishable all over the place, and the line between public and private is a lot blurrier than it used to be.
Yeah. Now, since this came out, there's a lot of other people who sort of have that, you know, sort of a paranoia around that. Their church leaders are reading their blog and, you know, they're leaving comments and stuff that like, you know, as they're working through their own stuff and their own writings and things that they're out to get them. And, you know, it's hard. It's really hard because there's not a central church excommunication office where all this stuff goes through, right? It's on a case-by-case basis. Each bishop is charged to care over his own flock. And so you might have a bishop that's going to be really strict on one thing and another bishop to be very liberal on one. And so you're going to, I mean, it's a little bit apples and oranges as you say, well, it was fine when I was over here. Yeah. And now that I'm here, you are going to call me in and say that I can't do this.
Here's the thing though. You say it's weird because normally the matters like this are supposed to happen at the local level. And I do believe like you that they do, but many have wondered because this hit Kate Kelly and John DeLynn at the same day, whether this was in one way or another orchestrated from Salt Lake, which is an interesting question. And it has come to light that there is a committee in the church. It's actually called the Strengthening Church Members Committee. This is real. Church spokesperson Jessica Moody was open about it. She calls it, quote, a clearinghouse to share public information with local leaders about members participating in abuse, fraud, and other activities that may endanger others, close quote. So what it means is that many people could simply say the church could be keeping tabs on somebody, flagging one's records or whatever it may be, which they do, by the way. If you're as much as even disfellowshipped for something, there's a flag on your record that doesn't go away for a while. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you, but the church uses that to keep track of you, who you are, and if there's just a blight on your record that shouldn't be there, which is interesting.
Well, which would probably be meaningful if, say, you engaged in active, you know, trying to draw people away. You are excommunicated, come back into the church, and then move to a new ward.
Yeah,
I mean,
so,
that's relevant information.
But the interesting thing here is this committee does exist. Apostles are a part of it. And so it does mean, though, in one way or another, that people in Salt Lake are keeping track of those more prominent individuals, you know, whoever's raising enough attention, commenting and whatever they're doing, and then actually sending that information to local leaders, which is fascinating because you could potentially have a bishop or a stake president who are ignorant to what John DeLynn is up to, and frankly don't care. They've got better things to do than to worry about John DeLynn's podcast,
well,
right?
Think about it, yeah.
But instead they get emails from Salt Lake saying, by the way, are you aware of what John DeLynn is saying?
Well, John DeLynn is a great example, right? Because if he's in all intents and purposes removed himself from his congregation, right? Requested that his ward doesn't contact him and all that
kind of
stuff.
Well, he still goes to church, but yeah, he doesn't want contact from bishops or home teachers and stuff. Yeah.
Well, so let's say a new bishop moves in. I mean, he may not have any idea that a John DeLynn is even in his ward, right? And how does he know that he's supposed to be the one that's caring after this guy and helping nurture and lift? So I mean, the John DeLynn thing, sort of an interesting case. It's very, very bizarre to me to see an excommunication or a disciplinary council dealt with in such a public way, because it normally is. I mean, to keep it from being embarrassing, it's dealt with in private.
That's the idea.
It becomes very embarrassing if you send it to national.
The funny thing, though, is John DeLynn was on the record saying that when he received this notice, his friends encouraged him to go to the press with it because otherwise he for sure would be excommunicated. That his only fighting chance was to go public with it and hope that the wave of outcries from his supporters, whomever else, would invoke compassion or anything else within his stake president or his, you know, high council, which is interesting. I mean, it's say, hey, yeah, do this, and it's the only way you'll stay in the church, which is basically saying, if I ever have a problem with the church, if I mount a PR campaign, they might change their mind.
Right. Save Ferris. Okay.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, I guess so. I think one thing with John Dolan, it's very interesting with the strengthening committee thing. It turns out because the stake president met with him once and had transcriptions of his podcasts. So it's like people, there's people in Salt Lake who might actually be listening through podcasts, providing transcriptions and sending them along. I hope they're doing that.
If they are, could they send them to us so that we could just add that as a transcript on the
It would a lot, actually. So if you're listening, strengthening the members committee, please send us our transcripts. You can contact at thisweekinmormons.com. We will accept all transcripts.
Yeah, or facebook.com.
All these things. We would love to hear from you. Because we're way too lazy to listen through 50-odd minutes of show and transcribe the whole thing. Never going to happen. Never going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Not going to happen. Okay, so Kate Kelly. Let's do that real quick. Kate Kelly's situation is a little bit different. Obviously, she's the ordained women leader. Ordained women, the movement to ordain or to
it's
get
eponymous.
Women ordained
yes,
in the priesthood.
Exactly.
In case you're wondering, so she got a similar letter. It was a letter from her bishop in D.C. and she moved from D.C. What? Like, I'm still sort of trying to piece together the picture in my head of her situation in the church. So. She was active
She's always
in D.C.,
been active,
started
yes.
the Ordained Women Movement. Is,
yeah.
Is
yeah.
she currently
the,
active?
Here's the one thing. John Dolan has expressed his doubts, his concerns. Kate Kelly is on record saying, no, like, she believes the church. She believes in the Book of Mormon. She believes in President Monson as a prophet. She's on board with, like, everything in the church. There's just this extra caveat that she believes women should be ordained. So she's not trying to call into question the history of the church and this and that and why people should be upset or leave. She just thinks that women should have the priesthood, basically.
So in your readings, I mean, what's wrong with that?
Well, I would say if I were viewing this through the lens of the Strengthening Members Committee or anybody else who is curious, I think it's one thing to, how do we say it? It's one thing to have ideas and to float those ideas. I would honestly, I mean, here at This Week in Mormons, we have floated many ideas, Al. You and I have worked through lots of different concepts of faith and
Yeah, we pride ourselves on being termed floaters.
Well, we've talked about a lot of things on this show. And I think we've done so in an open way. But we haven't done so in a way where, one, we've told other people to follow our own line of thinking, or we've organized any kind of a greater rally or a cause to push for that in a lobbying sense. And I guess that's the difference. They actually had a church spokeswoman also on Radio West, which was pretty interesting, honestly. They had, what was her name? I'm trying to... Ali Issam, who is one of the people a couple grades below Michael Otterson, okay? She's a higher up, appeared on Radio West. They talked a lot about excommunication, what it means to the saints. And I love that what she said, here's a quote. She said, "It's one thing to make one's views known. It's quite another to actively draw others away from clear doctrine." And so I would believe, because the church doesn't comment on the internal proceedings of any sort of disciplinary council, whether even if it's made public, that it would be something along those lines. Kate Kelly is free to believe in female ordination and bring it up in church and sacrament meeting and gospel doctrine and have these beliefs and ponder them and work through them in whatever way she wants. But instead, I feel like she's presented a public face of saying, we believe in female ordination because it is the only path to actual equity for women in the church. That is an antiquated notion that women should somehow be second-tier citizens in any body, least of which should be a religious organization. Ergo, women need to have the priesthood to obtain that equality, and that is our mission, and that is what we are doing. Become a member of Ordained Women and join the movement. And I think those sorts of things are what tip the scales.
What was the quote you mentioned to me earlier?
That was the other thing that Ali Issam mentioned, that the name Ordained Women itself is perceived as a grammatical ultimatum because it is not – what's it called? It's an imperative, right? It's called Ordained Women.
Yeah, there's
– It's not called period. Female yeah, ordination, a noun. It's effectively a verb of ordained women, a command in that sense. And so those things have ruffled some feathers. Can I piece together a bit more of a timeline for you? This is all my interpretation,
sure.
Okay? But this is just what I see from my great detective skills. The Bluth boys. So
this is Hardy
big
Boys
time
does
right here,
Mormonism.
Okay, so we've talked about a lot of things here. Now, based on the letters that Kit Kelly also released publicly, which she didn't have to do, she could have privately gone through this experience and let it be her own thing. But instead, if you want a personal gripe, she's very much using it, I think, for her own party, effectively. You know, I mean, it's this is all. I mean, this is getting ordained women all kinds of press and making the church look bad in the process. Like it's an old institution that marginalizes women and all that stuff. So there was a meeting that Kate Kelly must have had on May 5th. And this is from, I believe, her stake president. He talks about the usual stuff. He loves her, blah, blah, blah. But in the end, they say that they met on May 5th, and she was placed on informal probation, which means, you know, you're not supposed to act in public things. You can't represent yourself as a member in good standing of the church, which I think they wanted to get across so that Kate Kelly could not promote ordained women as, I am a member in good standing promoting this, like, legally, the church could say, no, you are not a member in good standing promoting this. And that changes the message. But that happened on May 5th. What happened then on May 15th was when ordained women announced their six discussions. And we've talked about those on a couple podcasts ago. So that went down, right? They just soldiered on and did that. So then her next letter comes on May 22nd, which discusses more about the meeting on May 5th. Blah, 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 blah. And that was that letter. And then the discussions continue. And then June 8th, she gets the letter saying the bishop is considering formal disciplinary action on your behalf, including the possibility of disfellowshipment or excommunication on the grounds of apostasy. You're invited to attend this council and give your response. The one thing is the bishop understands she's now living in Utah. And if she's not can't make it, they're willing to make a reasonable adjustment to do it. And they're supposed to have the council on the 22nd, this coming Sunday.
Well, that's what made me ask if she's still active. Why aren't her records?
Okay, this is another question, and we don't know everything because we only know the side of the story that's presented to us by the public faces promoting their cause, because the church doesn't comment on these internal workings. But we do know that the First Presidency can issue injunctions if a member in question, in this sense, wishes to move records. They can put a block to refuse the transfer of records, no matter where that individual may go. That way, the records stay with the leaders who were most involved, I guess, in whatever was going on.
That'd be interesting.
That is a real thing, and they can do that. The question is, did they do that? Did Kate Kelly request a change of records? Because she's just stopping in Utah for a month and a half or so before moving to Kenya, and if I were moving somewhere and stopping for 6 to 8 weeks, I wouldn't bother moving my records. I'd just leave them where I used to live and then transfer them when I moved to my new permanent location. I think that's a normal thing for people to do. So Kate Kelly, though, is unable to attend, because it's going to be in Virginia. I don't believe much in trial by absentia. I think that's a little lame and not on even on Kate Kelly's part. I just don't like that idea. I would hate for anyone to have to be tried without being present and only offering a written statement while other people decide your fate, you know. I've been talking a lot. You need to talk.
Huh. No, I mean it's I like the timeline.
Thank you. Thank you.
So Kate Kelly then, she made her information very public. She went on and wrote her own op-ed in The Guardian, which, man, she's, to me, it feels very, very opportunist. And again, I'm trying very hard to not be, I mean, my own opinions here, because what's going on is, There's a lot of people who are identifying with Kate Kelly in the fact that she is a woman and she wants change, and you know they want to be treated equal, and they identify very closely with her. Where the majority of women are sort of lost in that is that not all women feel the same drive to be ordained into the priesthood. Right, and so there's a lot of disconnect there where I think Kate Kelly thinks that she understands all women and is representing them. I don't know.
Well, because she's refused to ever be on the show, for the record, just so you all know, if that peppers your thoughts.
Yeah,
there you go. I have, and her response at the time. This is way in the early days of ordained women when we thought it was something of interest. And we wanted to have a genuine discussion about it. This was like almost a year ago, probably, that we approached her about it. Because she and I, we've said it before, served in the same mission. I've known her for years. And we said, hey, I want to come on. We can talk about this. You know, maybe you could be here. We could have other people who might not agree with you. But we can have a discussion about it and see what's what. But Kate refused because that would not, you know, why would she want to jump into a lion's den? And I understand we weren't trying to promote, like, hey, come in here and we're all going to attack you. But I've seen repeatedly that Kate Kelly seems to refuse to put herself in situations where she is subjected to scrutiny, legitimate scrutiny that she has to respond to on this and that. And that, it's smart.
It's smart.
Brilliant PR, and it keeps her from being wrong. But I've also seen that she's mostly refused to address those things. And she wouldn't come on our show even in the early days when we just wanted to talk about what she was doing. Simple.
Well, so again, I don't know, but I feel like she views herself as sort of the heroine for this underrepresented minority, right? And so by like in doing that though, there's a lot of women that are like, no. Like you're missing the point. I'm all for, you know, like the praying in general conference, the, you know, let's be treated the same, like let's get a lot of the you know, men are better than women sort of thinking out of these old timers, which you know, to be completely fair, is still very prevalent in a lot of areas just because of social norms and things like that. So, and I'm the same way, right? Like there's a lot of us that are like, yeah, that's really, really good. But then when she says, well, good. So we're all together in the fact that we're oppressed to a degree. Here's our demands. And that's where she sort of separates herself out from the majority, I think. And where most women are able to.
And I think this would be a good moment to remind our listeners that, as if we can even editorialize, we welcome some of the discussions about women's issues that have come in part because of things ordained women has done. And we've said that before. There has been stuff where we have missed a few steps where women could be given more responsibilities and opportunities in the church. And there are some areas where I still think it's, you know, it's weird. I even think little things like the fact that if you're going to be a female church employee, you can't be married or you need to be, you know, a widower, divorced or kids out of the house and stuff like that. When really, like, who cares? Let people make their own decisions. But we've never been super on board with the methods ordained women have used, like you said, Al, sort of working under the assumption that this is necessary. This is a necessity for women in the church to have true equality, de jure and de facto, legitimate equality.
One of her lines, a quote from her op-ed, because of them speaking about her heavenly parents or about different churches, I can't decide which. I can more clearly see the face of God, and
what she's referring to there are actually the women she's worked with around the world because she's a human rights attorney. And she's saying they have taught her
that
there is no reason that our churches, mosques, and synagogues should be the last bastion of sexism in the world. Yeah, but, yeah.
And because of them, I can more clearly see the face of God, and she's beautiful. It reminds me, what was that 90s song?
Dishwalla. Tell me all your thoughts on God, because I'd really like to meet her.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
But then you also have Joan Osborne. The 90s. Ah, the black hole of music. We love it. Except for Jimmy World's
Clay. Those days were great.
Listen to it.
The best.
So as this continues to go on, there's a lot of reference to the September 6th, which I wasn't very familiar with. Apparently, back in the 90s.
Well, it wasn't a single day, but it all happened. Yeah, in September.
It was a big month where several plump women and a man with a beard, two men, were excommunicated. So these were like prominent thinkers, and you read through these stories, and there's some of this that. It's a little bit frustrating because the church is in this weird position where it's opened to discourse, like let's talk about it, let's question, and they're becoming more and more so. Back in the day, these people that were critical at all of the church, and to some of them, I mean, they were very critical of the church, but some of them weren't. I mean, it was like they were trying to sort through things. All of them were sort of, I don't know, as it's described in this article, and I don't know that much about it, but they were kind of witch hunted.
Yeah, well, they all published.
Right.
This is where a lot of people are freaking out, because this was 20 years ago, and despite this and that, I think we all kind of felt like we'd move beyond the time of going after intellectuals and those who might publish things that maybe don't toe the line perfectly. And instead, it seems like we're just conjuring up all of these horrors of 1993 again. And you can talk to people who remember that, and they'll say it was terrible, it was a PR nightmare for the church. It was just unfortunate, because everyone was sitting here well aware that six people were getting excommunicated. Well, one was disfellowshipped and never excommunicated. But six people received disciplinary action in a very unfortunate, very public way. And it's like we're going back to that all over again. And you see similarities even for the reasons why this happened to the September 6th. And so it's hard not to see some similarities between what's happening now with everybody else. Because some of these things were just critical. Like Michael Quinn was a Mormon historian, but he wrote a lot of things that were critical of Mormon leaders, argued that they were influenced by things like folk magic, superstitious beliefs, et cetera, et cetera. There's too much to talk about on the September 6th here, but it was an unfortunate period in our history, and it's going to be unfortunate, I think, again, if it goes, you know, all the way with Kate Kelly and John.
Well, do you really feel like that would be an unfortunate episode?
Well, I think anyone being excommunicated is unfortunate. I agree, like you said, it's a step that can lead to something positive in the end, but come on.
This is a weird part about all this, though, because it's sort of idolizing these two, right, and saying their steps of excommunication or disciplinary action are so much greater. The little chump guy who just was, you know, having sex with a bunch of women over here, doesn't merit. I mean, why?
And
why
that is sad,
that
and because all of those are dark days, and in some ways, I agree with that idea because this, unfortunately, they're. Kit Kelly and John DeLynn's causes might be worth addressing. But let's not forget that there are, sadly, many people throughout the global church of all the millions of members that we have where excommunications transpire for non-public reasons, but like Al said, because of infidelity, because of potentially apostasy. But I think apostasy tends to happen at a large scale because it's really one of the only ways for it to really go down.
No.
Well, you know what I mean. Like, dude, you're leading people. You're being a public voice.
I live in Missouri, man. Apostasy happens all the time.
But there are many people who are disciplined for a variety of offenses and wrongdoings up to even excommunication. And we never hear about them, and it's sucks.
But I'm asking, like, why is this is a dark day in their history? Why is this a dark day in our history?
Are we happy at any
history?
Point if we excommunicate people for perceived openness?
I'm not saying we're happy about it. But I'm not saying that this is like a black eye on
not
us.
On us as individuals, but
us as a church. I'm saying, or is there a different
well,
way
who
that the
am
church
I to,
should
who
handle
am I
this?
To say? I think there are many people.
Well, you can make.
Well,
a
there
suggestion.
Are many, like
Give
for example, there's this whole Room for All petition going around, which we were not asked to sign. Room for All people, for bloggers and podcasters.
We
What's
have
wrong with you people?
On our show.
We have more
we
downloads
have
than
listeners.
Your stupid show, other person. Listen to us. So the point is, but the Room for All idea is just that hoping that we can move past those things and have more compassion. Like, are we really in a day and age where the question is, you know, has Kate Kelly actually committed apostasy? Has she committed apostasy that merits excommunication? Or
disciplinary action does not mean that there's not room for you in here, though. That's not what it's saying, right? That's not the point of this. And I felt like we saw a lot of this at this last general conference. President Neukdorf, come on,
that's where it's
come
coming
on in,
from, yeah.
Right? Like we love you, yeah. And then you had Elder Holland and I forget there was one other great talk on like, listen, obedience is going to be hard, right? Like don't expect. We're all about love and open and good. But guess what? There's going to be times where we have to say this is right and this is wrong, and it's going to be unfortunate, and people's feelings are going to get hurt. But it's coming, right? And they referenced that in the last general conference exactly. And so knowing those two things, right? There is room for everybody. We're not all cookie cutters. We don't all have to be the same. But there is a range of what's acceptable, and outside of that range, you have to come back in. If the church doesn't do that, if all the church is happy and hugs. It doesn't help any of us get anywhere, right? It's not giving us direction if it says no matter what.
We forget oftentimes that one of the great missions of the church is perfecting the saints. And then we get upset when part of perfecting
the
saints means,
perfect
the saints. Wait a minute, my line of thinking is wrong and I need to change course. I guess the difference is I think there are many who are hoping that actual excommunication is something that should be in the past. You can discipline people, you can work with people, you can have meetings, you can have counsel, and be a little bit more open and accommodating of these other points of view and issues and concerns without having to step as far as taking away one's church membership. I think that's a concern for many, and that's why it would
hurt. Here's what's crazy is I feel like the church really has come a long way, right, since 20 years ago. I feel like I feel like for the discourse and stuff that happens on the internet, for the amount of transparency that the church itself tries to provide, I feel like they've come a long way. I feel like having to put a hard stop on both John DeLynn and Kate Kelly's rhetoric probably was like, what advantage does the church have in blowing this up in a big PR storm? They don't come out looking better because of this. This is something that has come after, I'm sure, like a lot of deliberation, right? And so here they are saying, all right, well, this is actually outside the line, so let's bring it back in. And the tone of both of those letters is exactly that. Let's bring it back in. You know, right now you're here, you're at an 8, we're going to bring it down to a 6. That's okay.
Well, that's true, I think many are saying that, hey, we can take it from an 8 to a 6 without also saying, like, people are wondering, like on Radio West, he used a great metaphor. Was this like an inside pitch to a batter? You're not actually trying to hit the guy or take him out of the game, but you just pitch in to be like, hey, I'm watching you. Don't lean over the plate. Get it together. Is that what this is? Is this a threat? Is this a shot over the bow to try to correct course before it gets worse?
Think about this, though, man. The letter from the stake president to John DeLynn, I love you, I'm concerned about you, let's talk about this.
They do always say that.
Right? Right. It's not even a shot across the bow. This is, I am your leader in this organization, and I have some concerns. Can we work through it? You know, like Kate Kelly, right? If you were in active conversation or communication.
Which
she talks about. She talks about how she was. She was taking it into her bishop, and they were going through it. Right, so at this point, if he felt the need to call her in and have a discussion about it, I mean, like, go chat about it. Let's actually show a little bit of faith in our leaders and go chat about it before we throw it out to the national news, right? Before we try and write these big op-eds. It's from the timeline, she still hasn't had this whole thing hasn't even happened yet, right? The conversation hasn't, but she's already taken the liberty to go to, her op-ed piece. Her various articles and appearances and these different things talking about how they're an oppressed minority in the church, right? Like if you are concerned about this, and obviously their leaders are concerned about it, let's talk through it. Let's get through that before we worry about number one here, which is her or him, right? That's how it comes. That's how it's coming across to me.
Well, no, admittedly, personally for me too, I watch all this, and I easily say, where is the well-being of the church in all of this? This all seems very much about my vision as Kate Kelly, that I believe everyone should have. And you know, I'm not going to fault someone for having a firm belief about something, even if I don't get it. Whatever. But But it does seem so single-sided. With everything that, this is all for the betterment of ordained women. Why else would she be going to the press and doing interviews and blah, blah, blah? And of course, like you said, of course it makes the church look bad. Right. And I do think there is, like you said, there's room for everybody. You know, there's room for people even receiving discipline. Cause I've met people who have been excommunicated and been rebaptized into the church. And some of them, I'm not saying this is something we should ever desire to experience ourselves, but many of them have said, like, that was a thing that shook me up enough where it, it allowed me to really, really clean house and get back on track. It's not that way for everybody.
Oh my gosh. The early days of the church are a great example of that, right? You have a lot of these, a lot of these folks that, I believe Oliver Cowdery is a great example, right? Where you get so lifted up in your own importance in the church or in yourself, that eventually, the action that the church has to take is to remove you from the church through this disciplinary action. And then it takes a couple of years. As he comes back to the church, he comes back, dies a member in good standing, like came back and partook of the blessings of the gospel, right? That's the intent. And I think, I don't want to draw parallels, here, so I won't, but the idea that, it's a little bit of that self-absorption or you self-importance that you start understanding in yourself, you get very excited about it. It's probably very, very easy to put yourself in a position in the church.
Exactly.
That isn't
real. One of the hilarious things they use this, Kit Kelly discussed on Radio West, how Emma Smith rightfully noticed tobacco, asked Joseph, said, hey, what's up with this? And then we got the word of wisdom. And that's a fair story. But by that same logic, is she comparing herself to Emma Smith? Is she saying, I have the ear of the prophet and I deserve to have the ear of the prophet? Am I the prophet's wife? Am I the person who is in that sacred role through eternal ceilings and through eternal sacred ordinances that is allowed to be a counsel and someone of deference to a prophet. That's not to say we don't all deserve audience with our leaders in one way or another, but it's almost as if Kate Kelly is saying, yeah, I'm at that same level. President Monson, me, I deserve that same level of audience with the prophet of the church because I see a problem here and I want him to look into it.
All right, well, it's officially been 15 minutes. Let's run through some of the rest of this stuff real quick.
I just want to make sure there's nothing else that we're missing on that. Oh, sorry, one more gripe about the Kate Kelly thing.
Go.
She used the phrase, she said, on our mission, our slogan was, open your mouth. And I've always been taught that that's what, you know, so that's what I need to do. I would be denying myself if I did not open my mouth and speak out about what this was. So, as someone who served under the Spain-Barcelona mission with Shane M. Bowen, open your mouth did not refer to, I feel what I feel, ergo let me say whatever I want to say. That would result in a breakdown of a mission because you'd have missionaries going rogue and teaching whatever they wanted during the discussions. Open your mouth meant do not be afraid to share
all
your
right,
testimony with people.
This is clearly a personal diatribe. This is something that struck a little close to home, maybe. And I'm
so
sorry.
I was like, that's not what open your mouth meant. That's not
I'm
open
sorry.
Your mouth.
So let's see.
Get off my phone.
It's some news. Church was sued over copyright infringement. They licensed the Bible audio recordings from, who's that? Who's
okay.
That cool guy? He, really nice fella, Bob Litchfield.
Stephen Fry.
That's one.
Oh, Stephen Fry.
So no, it was not Stephen Fry. I don't know.
So, yeah, this was what? They licensed it, but then I think their licensing did not allow
Alexander
them to use it in absence.
Read it. Yeah, and so, yeah, they licensed it, and then they commercialized it, which they weren't allowed to do, and so they're being sued over that. They used the audio version of the Bible inappropriately.
And then, where were, so were they, I guess, was their authorization back in the day to only use it for CDs, like, of the audio readings? Of the
no, they, yeah, I, well, you, I think it was...
Did you get at the distribution yeah, center? Just that kind of
that's
thing?
That's the idea.
And that was it. And I'm sure in their minds they saw it that, like, well, the Gospel Library app is the new digital incarnation of that similar medium.
Mm-hmm.
So where's the harm, right? Other news, LDS Family Services is changing its role with adoptions. I think this is kind of sad, actually. They're no longer going to operate full-scale adoption services. So it's just going to be all about resources, counseling for birth parents and prospective adoptive parents. But you will no longer be able to straight up go there and say, and actually go through an adoption.
You can't order a baby
with LDS
there.
Family Services. Which is, I think, tragic.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. And that's going to be weird because I think the workload of a lot of those people is going to go down significantly, which means... LDS Family.
Well,
don't you think? Like,
presumably,
the LDS Family
yeah.
Services is a big operation.
Well, and it's just, and there's many reasons why. Some are saying this is legitimately financial because the church takes a loss on every single
what, like
one.
Like $20,000.
And they do it because eternal. And they do it because eternal families are more important than the church caring if they, you know, turn a profit or break even on keeping families together and all that stuff, which I think is fully understandable and commendable. But if it is money, that's just sad, and I hate to see that happen. I could also see a place where, because of the impending legalization of gay marriage, the church would see itself being stripped of its right to offer adoption services because it would refuse to offer adoptive babies to gay couples, and therefore the state would say, well, now you can't do adoptions at all. And so I could see a preemption going on there as well, but I don't know.
That's,
speculation.
That stinks. Let's see. Archaeologists are currently looking for the Joseph Smith Senior House. I contacted my buddy who lives up in Nauvoo, and he said that there is indeed a dig going on there, and like the community is invited to participate. They found some of the footings and are trying to identify it. So that's kind of cool.
That is excellent. In other news, Mormon Helping Hands are serving at the World Cup in Brazil. And the question is, if they wear those yellow blazers, how will anyone tell them apart from Brazil fans?
They're not. They're all Brazil fans. That's what's going on.
This is a place where the Mormon Helping Hands style and livery does not benefit our cause. We're not sticking out.
They should be like different kits, right? Like the USA kit. Be like, I'm a Helping Hands of America.
Anyways, they're just volunteering basically at typical events, going to tourist sites, helping people at airports, just kind of general helping out with the cause during the World Cup.
So let's see.
Which is nice.
The Donetsk mission is closing, or is closed now. Political instability has driven, so that's the eastern part of Ukraine, so the Donetsk went from the Dnipro River east. And so that whole mission is closed now, and they've just sort of dissolved that and they're letting the branches run independently of the mission, which is kind of crazy, man. Like those.
Well, not completely. Not independently.
Well, independent of mission.
Now it's been absorbed into the Dnipropetrovsk mission.
Yeah, but let's be honest, the Dnipropetrovsk mission isn't going to be sending missionaries out to.
No, that's true. The branches are going to be on their own for a while, and also the Kharkiv district. Those are actually under the Kyiv mission now.
As they should be.
So they've...
That's a huge bummer because, I mean, the church is so fragile over in some of those Eastern European... Like, the missionaries are a huge deal over there, right? So...
I mean, there are... So now there are officially three missions in Ukraine. This isn't just, like, for the moment kind of thing. There are three missions in Ukraine.
No, crisis.
That's just it. But in better news, we got a new stake in Thailand. So everyone celebrate with the Saints there. Thailand got its second stake. Which is big news from them.
And also, apparently, there's a book with pictures of the temple. I'm not sure why you care about this, Jeff, but you put it on here to talk about.
I saw it. It was a good book. I feel like the downside is it's only of American temples. So we missed great opportunities to have beautiful pictures.
We should go around and take pictures of temples all over the world.
Al, do we have it in the budget for me to get one of those nice Nikon, D5000s?
Absolutely.
Is it part of it? It is.
Yeah. And unlimited travel.
Excellent.
Why have we not done this?
I have unlimited travel under my budget.
Jeff, our budget is amazing.
I didn't know this was what the twin budget allowed for. I'm so happy.
Yeah, obviously.
My life is better than I thought it was before.
Too bad you're married and can't go anywhere.
I can go anywhere. We've decided that we have to have man trips.
It what? We get them back?
Danielle, can we have man trips? She gave us a thumbs up. She said so.
Turning corners. All right. Equal rights for Americans.
I shall not be castrated.
I don't know why you were... Okay. Anyway, hey, everybody. Crazy show. Thanks for sticking with us if you made it to the end. That's pretty impressive. Please come and drop us a line. We've gotten a couple of good... We had a great mention this week from one of our buddies down in Southern Texas, I believe. He's talking about he's investigating the church and stuff, and he's like, I can give up cigarettes and booze, but if you take my sweet tea away, hot dang, man, how are you going to do that?
Yeah, your response almost made no sense either.
I said, hey, it's in a jug. I think that might be okay.
No. Let me read this, because it was the most random run-on sentences. Those jugs of iced tea, man, they get you. See, from Duck Dynasty style, they get you. Especially when the Mormon equivalent is what? Maybe Sunny D, a jug of Sunny D. No man's bowels, no matter how blessed, are built to handle a jug of Sunny D.
It's true. Like, if you try and swap out your jug of sweet tea with Sunny D, you're going to... I mean, there's no church in the world that can make that true. It's bad.
Well, good for you. But we love hearing from you guys, so send us an email at contact@thisweekinmormons.com and hang out with us at thisweekinmormons.com. You know, comments, things, blah, blah, blah.
We want to see you.
All good stuff.
Come on by.
Did we talk about our social? Find us on social
Pinterest,
media. We exist everywhere.
We don't do anything on Pinterest. Facebook.com/thisweekinmormons or Twitter @TheRealTwim. Okay, good.
Those are the ones that matter the most, I would say. And look out for our other podcast, Sunday School Bonanza, where we talk only of things spiritual, gospel doctrine lessons. And Third Hour of Power, which we do with Grady of This Mormon Life, our strong ally and friend who would never betray us to anyone.
Why do you betray us,
We love
us, Grady?
The work he does. And listen to those podcasts, everybody. Right. And thanks for being here. I'll
see you, Jeff.
Everybody. All right, guys. Hope to hear from you soon. This is This Week in Mormons. Thanks for sticking with us. Long show this week. We thought it was good. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. This week in Mormons.